I'm Madeline Walter.
And I'm Ben Axelrad, and we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
Anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
Welcome to Definitely Dying, the podcast about health concerns, both real and imagined.
Because it's better to laugh about it together than cry about it alone.
I have a runny nose and an ingrown hair, and
my knee hurts.
My arms
is this a rash?
Is that a rash? And I had Asian food, and that makes me feel kind of sick. I might be lactose intolerant.
Guys, welcome back to another Definitely Dying. I didn't say hello because it's been pointed out to me that I say it the same all the time, and I'm starting to say it the same way I say it on the podcast in my life.
Hello.
And it's all I'm doing is copying the way Ben, my husband, says hello on his podcast on the cusp. And so it's just deeply embedded in me. So I'll just say, welcome to the podcast. We're very glad you're here. Ben, how you doing today? There's a lot of cold and flu going around. Have you been susceptible to that at all?
No. I mean, I wouldn't go anywhere near anyone who had one. If I struck you as someone who would be helpful while you were going through a minor bout of sickness, that impression was incorrectly received.
Great.
I don't want anything to do with people's germs.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my hugest fears is that. It shouldn't be because it's seemingly mm-hmm. minor. But, I would say one of my hugest fears is that my life will be derailed by minor sickness. I have to – I teach like 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. We do this podcast. I've got other things going on in my life. Stop acting like I don't. I've got plenty of things going on in my life. And just like to spend a little time with somebody who had a bad cold and for me to then get sick and then not to be able to do all my things and then have like 2 weeks build up and 1 week builds into – 2 weeks, and then next thing you know, like you're constantly playing catch up.
Yeah,
terrifying to me.
Yeah.
What about you? How do you feel about
minor? I sometimes crave to be minorly sick,
just so you can stop.
Like, yeah. Like I feel like we've had this conversation where like I want to be just sick enough that like I can't use my laptop and I feel okay just like watching a bunch of movies back to back.
Right.
But I don't. That doesn't make me like. Excited to be around someone who's sick because if I catch sickness from someone, if I can trace the way I've become sick, then I get really mad at myself.
Oh, okay.
I go like, this is your fault. You were so careless. Now you can't work.
You're not mad at them.
No.
You're mad at you.
No, I'm mad at me because it's like, it's not their fault. I'm only mad at them. I'm trying to think of like a scenario where I would actually be like mad at someone for
like if they didn't tell you that they were sick and then you came over and they were sick and it's just like why'd you do that?
I get that doesn't really I don't really get that nervous about that or like I don't really get mad at people, but I do get very paranoid when I'm sick about making other people sick. Like if I get like a little like tickle in my throat, like usually I'm like a big cup sharer, straw sharer. Ugh. I'll take a bite of someone's sandwich till the day I die.
Meningitis for you.
but if I'm feeling a little sick, I get very like anal about not wanting to spread my germs to other people.
Oh yeah.
Because I have an unhealthy complex that severely blows out of proportion the amount of influence I could have on somebody else's life.
No, I feel like you have immense influence over people's lives. I mean, rarely in the germ form, mostly in the way that that you inspire greatness in others, which is obviously not what germs do. What if that was like what if that was germs' thing? Was that they just inspired greatness?
It was like a trade-off.
Yeah.
You were like sick but great.
Yeah, like you just like you're like you feel achy and tired and sniffly, but you're also like world class at soccer.
Ooh, that's a great question.
I'd take it.
I would take it too.
Mostly because of how much I love soccer. Oh man.
I sometimes. Like, that makes me just contagion makes me like, sometimes I'm scared of contagion. Like, when we were coming back from our honeymoon, we were on a plane. We went to Cancun, but, like, we had a connecting flight from Mexico City to LA, and so it was a pretty long flight, and there was a guy who was so sick on the plane. He like wouldn't stop throwing up. He was so sick that the flight attendants were like, you got to get off the plane, like you're too sick to fly. And they had a doctor came on the plane, but I'm 99.9% sure that doctor was simply a flight attendant in a white coat. Like, she looked just like a flight attendant, and she had like a costume shop white coat on, and she like came and like looked at the guy, and she was like, it was all in Spanish, but I could tell what was going on. She's like, you're too sick to fly. And then he was like, no, I am not getting off this plane. I mean, because, like, who would want to, like, leave your family and stay in Mexico City where most likely he just, like, you know, had the water and, like, got sick, you know, like, got, like, some kind of food poisoning. But, like, they – so he basically was like, I'm not getting off this plane. And this quote-unquote doctor was like, okay. And they let him stay on the plane, and he hurled – the whole time. Ugh. He never stopped throwing up, and he was directly in front of us. Mm-hmm. And this was right in the middle of the height of Ebola fever. Everybody was like, all these people were like flying and getting Ebola. And Ben and I had this like silent sort of negotiation on this plane of like, should we change seats? Is it appropriate for us to change seats? Would it matter? Like, is this okay? And finally, like, I won out. Ben's, I think, sound opinion was like, it's crazy. You're not going to get Ebola. B, if you were going to get Ebola, moving four rows back wouldn't make a difference.
Right.
But we changed seats and watched L.A. Confidential a row apart from each other. I loved it.
Nice.
That was a great movie.
Yeah, it's a good flick.
It's fun. I didn't know that. I didn't know it was a period piece. I didn't know anything about it. It's great.
Yeah, it's an oldie.
I loved it.
Nice.
Kim Basinger.
Yeah, yeah.
No, what a bombshell.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know.
It's an all right movie.
Yeah, I honestly loved it.
I liked it at the time.
Ben thought it was fine. I haven't seen a lot of things, so honestly, anything that's not straight garbage, I'm always like so impressed that I love.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I saw Back to the Future for the first time a month ago.
Oh, yeah,
great movie!
Oh, yeah, that is
terrific.
A legitimately great
movie. It looked so stupid to me.
Yeah,
I was surprised I liked it.
Yeah, I mean it's a stupid idea, but it's a good movie.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. All right, well, podcast.
Don't you want to talk more about Back to the Future?
No,
but yeah, we should probably talk more about Back to the Future. One was good. One was good. Two was better. Three is garbage. Where they go to the Wild West.
Podcast.
They go to the Wild West and Doc Brown falls in love.
I liked number three because I went with my class in school to go see it. It was the end of the year party.
Podcast. I don't want to hear about you. I just want to say my opinions about Back to the Future. Podcast.
Is it podcast time?
Set one, two,
podcast. Man, we've got a really, really fun guest for you guys today. We're so happy to have him. His name is Paul Rust. He is the co-creator and star of Netflix's amazing, amazing, amazing series, Love. You can see him here at UCB every Thursday with the improv troupe Last Day of School. And every other Saturday, or no, I'm sorry, the second Saturday of every month, he and our good buddy Neil Campbell put on the Playhouse Masterpieces. What an excellent intro by me.
I thought it was great.
I loved it.
I thought it was really good.
I had a tear in my eye.
Yeah, it was human. Yeah. It was heartfelt.
Yep.
You know, it had some vulnerability to it. It was really lovely.
I mean, I believed every word that I said, and sometimes that doesn't come out as articulate. Yeah. When you're feeling it inside you and you're just letting it out, sometimes...
And we've already ran it by our fact checkers that everything you said is true. So dodged a bullet there.
Well, thank you so much for joining us,
Paul.
Yeah,
thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Yeah.
Big fans of your guys'.
Oh, thank you.
Just as people.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well,
wait till you hear this podcast.
Yeah. It'll really lower your opinion of us.
They are psychotic. this is going to be a real fun time.
Yeah. All right. How are you guys doing today? Good?
Yeah. It's a nice day here in Los Angeles. It's actually, yeah. It's like 70s and cloudy.
Oh, which I love
is,
it.
Oh,
which
it's
is beautiful.
So
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
It was too hot yesterday,
Too hot.
And muggy.
It was, is that what, because I went for a little jog yesterday and I really felt horrible. Yeah. I stopped so much that strangers started telling me, like, you can do it. It's like really embarrassing.
Somebody set up like an impromptu like table with cups of water just to hand out to you.
Yeah. It's like, oh, it's so nice that this lady with a problem is just doing her very best to move her crusty old body down the street. But, and so I was like sure that it was 100 degrees because of how hard of a time I was having. And then I looked at my weather app and it said it was not even 80.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That was,
But it was hot. It was hot, right?
It's been muggy all week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was un-California-ish muggy.
Yes. Okay. I feel better knowing that.
Yeah.
Yes.
I asked my neighbor. I was like, my neighbor's mom was visiting. And like when I like ran back from my run, they were like, hey, how are you? And I was like, is it hotter than we think?
Yeah.
And they truly were like, sure, good to see you. You're a real maniac.
Madeline goes running and then she returns and everyone else goes running. Thank you, everyone. Oh, wow. I'm going to get up out of here. When you guys get your zinger in, join me in UCB's inner sanctum. Paul, we like to start with this one particular question for all of our guests.
Sure.
We'll see how it fits you. On a scale of 1 to 10, is it okay that I did this? Sorry, you cut this part. Is it okay that I asked the question?
I thought you were going to ask the question.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
My bad.
It's great that you asked this question.
Welcome back to Ben Fears Abuse. No, from the person least likely to give it to.
No, I'm tough.
Yeah, you are tough.
You're tough and mean.
You're just nice to me. Our friendship has been based on this mutual, long-lasting kindness.
It's a bet.
It is.
Yeah.
Paul, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you think about death?
Ooh. I would say it's at a hearty 6. I was going to say 5, and then I bumped it up to 6.
What bumped it?
Yeah, what bumped it?
I did a mean average in my mind. It was like, oh, didn't think about it at all growing up.
Right.
And then, factored in the last few years, and it bumped up from a 5 to a 6. But you know what I think it partly is when I was a kid, I was raised a Catholic, so I really believed in heaven.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when I was a kid, up until very recently, I was like, what if there's a heaven? What do you got to worry about death for? I would actually think. Hey, I hope I die
right.
So I get to go where there's pizza every day and water slides taking you everywhere you got to go.
I just sort of had this thought because I was thinking about this. I went to a we talked about this a lot on another episode, so I won't get into too much detail. But I went to my grandfather's funeral recently. It was a Catholic funeral because my dad grew up Catholic. And so I was thinking a lot about heaven. And it just clicked for me that suicide has to be a sin. I bet they made that just so people wouldn't. If death is supposed to be better than life, or heaven is supposed to be better than life,
right?
Then if they hadn't made, if suicide wasn't an automatic ticket to hell,
right?
Then every person would have been killing
themselves.
It would
be like somebody who runs like a really hot club, finding out that there's like a secret way to like sneak into the club, and then being like, "No, if you go through this secret entrance, we'll decapitate you." I guess I got to go through the front door.
Yeah.
It seems like most rules for humans are because eventually humans figure out how to cheat and win quicker. Who would ever, if you're playing baseball, why would you ever run that long way around all those bases to get right back to where you started in the first place? You know, or like all the cheat cheat codes in Legend of Zelda or yeah, whatever.
Yeah. So, no, when I was growing up, I remember actually thinking, I said something to a friend in high school once where I was like, hey, I'm happy. I'm not scared of death. I'll just die. And then my friend went, but what about your friends and loved ones and family members? And yeah. I was like, oh, yeah. Right. Oh. I forgot about that. Yeah, maybe they miss me, yeah. Which is a nice thing to hear.
They die too.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll see them soon. Yeah. But I remember when I was a kid asking my mom once, I was like, are you scared of death? And she went, yeah. And I was like, why? But you'll know you'll go to heaven. And she went, I don't know. Which was like, whoa. Oh. Wow, did you murder somebody?
How did she mean, I don't know if I'll go to heaven or I don't know if heaven's real?
So, good question. Because when I was a kid, I interpreted it as, oh, my mom thinks she might go to hell. Yeah. Like, and then I was talking about it with one of my sisters. And she was like, oh, you don't think it was maybe mom was saying, I don't know.
Right.
Which would be atypical of my mom to be like saying like, I don't believe there's an afterlife, or I have questions if there's an afterlife.
Atypical?
Atypical, yeah.
Is
yes.
she quite religious?
Yeah, or religious in a way, a person who was raised Catholic and right. goes to church every Sunday.
Yeah.
Which is to say that I think she has faith. Right?
Yes.
But, you know, maybe she would say that to her 9-year-old son. Say, like, I don't know where we go after we die. Yeah. So, but, yeah, I guess as my thoughts have changed and stuff, and I'm no Bill Maher-esque staunch atheist or anything like that. I honestly don't know. It's probably more agnostic or whatever.
Yeah.
I think when I was a kid, there was no fear of death because I was just like, yeah, you get to go to Disneyland in heaven. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. But now, yes.
Yeah.
Still, it's still not high. It's 5 or 6.
I feel like 5 or 6 is just that's a healthy answer. I mean, it's we've talked about it before that, you know, you obviously don't want to be either extreme. You don't want to be thinking about it constantly. Mm-hmm. And you also don't want to be an adult that's like totally unaware of the concept, you know.
Right.
That seems to be like, that's a form of
yeah.
I think that's a mental handicap.
Yeah.
Like I guess it's still true, though, regardless if I think there's an afterlife or not. I'd still, like, think, hey, why would you be scared of experiencing daily pain and misery? Like, that doesn't sound so bad. It probably does ultimately always come back to, like, oh, my friends and family and, you know, people I love, I'd miss them, you know? Yeah.
It's less about it being terrible and it's more or like the prospect being terrible and more just about it being unknown. And that, like, the one thing that we do know that's good to hold on to here is, like, those people that, like, love us enough to not want us to be dead.
I hope my epitaph says that. What you just said.
Whatever, you die like as soon as like the numbers go like 51% want you dead, and just wait until the odds are against you.
Are you if you're kind of don't fear death in a significant way, is there any, are you a generally fearful person?
Yeah. Well, it was funny when you said he, I don't fear death. That makes me sound like Evel Knievel or somebody who's very brave, and I would not say that.
Evel Knievel, Paul.
Eat Paul Knievel.
Eat Paul Knievel.
Don't eat Paul.
I don't know. I think I fear probably more other things happening to other people I care about rather than myself. And that makes it sound I'm very selfless. Like, I don't care. I worry about others. It's actually probably the most selfish thing, which is like, I don't want this thing to happen to somebody so I don't have to go through the pain of seeing them get sick or whatever, or die or whatever. Yeah. All that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of fearful stuff, yeah, I guess it usually boils down to the unknown. Is if I had to categorize the stuff that's scary, it's just like, oh, what's going to happen, you know? But it's not like a specific like, oh, I'm afraid to get into a car because I
Right.
I'm afraid to get on a plane.
Yeah.
What things are you afraid of? Like, because I would say like I'd be afraid. Like, for instance, I'd be afraid to skydive, or I'm afraid of, like, heights to some extent.
Yeah, I'm afraid of
dogs, big dogs.
I'm afraid of raw chicken.
Yeah, I'm afraid of raw chicken.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's listen to maybe 10 or 20 more, Madeline, you and I.
The question more was, will you listen to what we're afraid of?
Gladly. Happy to. I mean, I remember thinking once I went to, like, in... 2006, or around there, I went with some friends to like Las Vegas, and there's a hotel where you get on a roller coaster and the track goes
New York. New York?
It's at the Stratosphere or something, but it's like a track that goes over the lip of the top of the building. Yeah. So you get on a track, and then it goes over, and you just kind of hang over the side of the building, and then it goes back. And then it does a little fake out where it, like, jerks to, like, scare you.
Ooh,
and you didn't see a
jerk
when you're waiting in line. So you have a moment of, like, oh, fuck, they fucked it up. They farted it up. and I remember thinking, oh, before that, oh, I could go skydiving. Mm-hmm. That would be fun. And I would be, like, have a parachute that by all probability would work, you know. And then when I went on that thing, that was a big wake-up call, like a decade ago, where it was so terrifying.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm not the X Games person I imagine myself to be, where I could face something knowing, like, as long as I have
Previously, you were a professional skateboarder, right?
Yeah. I would snowboard all the time. I think after that was like at least a wake-up call of the things that I thought, oh, as long as there's some form of protection, I could be impervious to it. But then being like, oh, no, after that. But, yeah, in terms of stuff that I'm actually scared about, I guess it is like a loss, you know. Yeah. What else? Being like destitute.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Being destitute. Yeah. Is that something you're genuinely afraid of?
I don't know. I think like when I was, you know, and all this stuff I'm sure is born out of when you're a kid.
Mm.
But like my family by no means was like poor. But I think when you're a kid and you don't know what your family's finances are, and your parents are maybe frugal, you imagine their frugality is coming out of, like, that they're destitute, not that they have common sense and they're just, like, saying, like, we don't need to buy this thing. But I interpreted it sometimes as, like, oh, if I get this Alf doll, mom and dad are going to be in the shit house, you know?
I had a similar experience. Yeah. I remember my parents were like, I was obsessed with American Girl catalogs because I loved seeing all the tiny things.
I
guess it was just a picture. It could have been a big thing.
They put a scale. They'd have a little toothbrush or something next to it.
And finally, I remember they were like, oh, like, we'll get you one. And I got so anxious about, like, burdening my family with, like, the financial decision of getting, like, you know, an $80 doll.
right.
And then I just, like, lost all confidence that I could pick the one that would be worth that expense.
Yeah,
and
right.
I was like, I don't want one. I'm okay.
Yeah, I know. Which is, like, you know, if anything, your parents, our parents, whatever, they're doing the right thing, which is just making you thoughtful about, like, how you spend money.
Yeah.
But when it goes through your kid brain, I guess.
Were you an anxious kid? Because I don't think all kids think like that. Like, I was a pretty anxious kid. Not like, you know, like, I wasn't, like, you know, diagnosed with any, like, anxiety disorders. Yeah. I just remember, like, having a lot of, like, sort of, I was, like, a worried kid.
Oh, yeah.
Were you?
Worrisome was my main quality.
Really?
In addition to being a goofball. But I'm sure those things are hand in hand, you know.
Sure.
But, I was very anxious as a kid. And, you know, I remember having an irrational fear that my head would get stuck in my bedposts while I was sleeping. I would choke to death.
Just the thought
I would get
that,
strangled or something. Yeah,
like there was something about those bedposts that mine wasn't exactly the same. It was that like it looked so difficult to get out that it was enticing. Like, I need to stick my head in there to see if I could get it out, but I would never get it out.
Yeah.
And then I would, you know, and then I think that's how you just become the guy in town square that everyone liked. But, you know, in, like, medieval times.
That's what a stockade is.
That's funny. Yeah. I think, you know, that's like what, have you ever heard that's why cats have whiskers? That, like,
yeah, so they know how big, like, the things they can.
Yeah, they go, they grow according to their width of their body. So, like, when they start putting their head into something, their whiskers touch the sides and they go, oh, my head could fit here, but my whiskers can't, so my body can't. And I think when you're a kid, you that, like, fear of, you know, when you, like, get under some, like, couch cushions and then somebody sits on it.
Yeah.
And you have a moment where you're like, this is fine. This is cool. And then, like, 2 seconds later, you're like, I got to go. I think, like, that it was tapping into something like that with the bedpost. But, yeah, as a kid, I was, like, anxious about I remember, like, in junior high being, like, anxious about how I was going to coordinate my hangout times with friends, because I would be conscious of, like, well, I don't want whoever, Bart, didn't have a friend Bart, I'm just doing Simpsons characters.
You wish you had a friend.
I didn't want to hurt Milhouse's feelings that I was, but no, that,
oh,
like,
did you not have a friend?
Yes, all the characters in Simpsons were my friends.
Okay,
you're deeply worried about spending equal time.
But that was, like, a big source of my anxiety, sort of like, oh, am I going to make somebody feel left out, or am I going to hurt somebody's feelings by doing hanging out with them instead of them? And I mean, I guess it's just, you know, the pains of being very popular. And, it's a weird anxiety to have, because you're basically, like, coming at it from the position of, like, wouldn't everybody love to be with me?
Did you have a lot of friends when you were a kid? I mean, all jokes aside, like, I mean, I didn't have many friends when I was a kid. I wasn't that well received.
I was not
very well received.
My tomato score was at a 65%.
Yeah, critically acclaimed, but not terribly well received from audiences.
That's funny.
My nickname around the schoolyard was just.
Well, just let
just the, a, thum- just a noise and a thumbs down.
And a wet fart.
Nah. Let's divvy up our friend time, but not give any to that guy.
Yeah,
and that
was no,
that's not true.
Well, you're blessed with friends now, Ben, who love you.
I'm rich
and
care
friends, about
baby.
You. Yeah. I mean, I think my need and desire to be liked really helped me get some friends.
Sure.
So, it led to good things. Yeah.
And I remember feeling anxious about the same things when I was a kid too. Yeah, like, I was, like, really terrified of, like, hurting someone's feelings. Mm-hmm. Like, because I think maybe, like, it got planted in my head at an early age, you know, like, the sort of very, like, well-intentioned lesson of, like, you know, don't hurt someone's feelings.
Yes, yeah.
But it, like, sort of, I think, was maybe grew in my brain to, like, slightly unhealthy proportion.
Yeah. Well, and I think, again, for me, I think it goes back to some Catholic upbringing, which I think is, like, you get somehow sort of convinced or indoctrinated into thinking that, like, your feelings are the same as action.
Right.
Mm. And so if I had a feeling of, oh, I feel like I'm leaving somebody out, it became, I'm leaving somebody out.
Ooh,
and what do I have to do to, like, change that?
Yeah.
And so I think there was a lot of that. I think that's where the anxiety, if I had to look back on it, I think that's where the anxieties came out of, was, like, even hostile feelings, like feeling like hostility instead of just being like, oh, this is just a feeling I have.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, you got to figure out any way possible to drain yourself of these hostile feelings.
Oh, wow.
So, like, so if you, when you were a kid and you saw, say, for instance, and, you know, it had nothing to do with you, but you saw another kid get left out, or you saw a kid get picked on, or whatever. How did that resonate with you? Have you always been, like, very sensitive to other people's?
Well, I go into talking about this with trepidation because I don't want to sound – I'm making myself sound like Gandhi.
No, 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 no. No, I don't think – I really don't think you are. And I'm not just saying that so that you'll go on with the story.
No.
I think this is something that resonates with Madeline and I as well, that feeling that as somebody who knows you outside of the walls of this podcast, where I meet most people in my life, inside of this jail-sized white room. but as somebody who knows you, I would consider you someone who's very caring about other people's feelings. And I think that that's while I understand what you mean by there is an aspect of that that feels slightly self-involved, I think that you just care about people, and that's not something that you have to hide from anyway.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I was a kid, once we were standing in a group of people, and this was like – this still sends like shudders down my spine. I remember like watching one kid say to another kid in front of a group of people like, "Oh, your breath stinks." Yeah. And I remember just like automatically hating this moment and wanting to get out of it. And a sort of confusion about why would that person ever say that?
Yeah.
Like, and we just must be entirely wired differently that, like, I am over empathizing with what that person's going through. And then the person who said it has a complete seemingly lack of empathy that they're saying. But whatever, kids are weird and they do mean things. And I'm sure I said vicious things too that I'm like repressing and blocking out of my mind.
Yeah, did you ever do something?
I was the person who said that. I'm like, Billy said that. Some weird
I hate
projection.
Billy, what a rotten little boy.
Paul B.
Did you ever do anything that you felt like what was the worst thing you did as a kid?
Because
like one time, like I went, went into the boys' bathroom once, like to like impress a boy. He wasn't in the bath. Like we were all hall monitors.
Was it like a dare?
It was like a sort of pseudo dare. Like one girl was going in there, and like it seemed like cool and tough. And I was like, I'll do it too.
Yeah.
And I went into the boys' bathroom, and then was like, then went back into the lunchroom. This is in fourth grade, and so then like the principal came into the lunchroom like 10 minutes later and said, like, "Did you go in the boys' bathroom?" And I was such a little wuss that I wouldn't have lied. I would never have felt comfortable lying. But I said, the girl who did it too was this girl called Allison. And I was like, "Allison did it too." And I ran us both out.
You're a rat.
And then when that should have been the thing I felt worst about, but I felt worse about just breaking the rules. I remember my parents picking me up from school that day, and I burst into tears in the car and just confessed and went, like, felt so horrible. Like, they never had to punish me because I always truly just like felt so over the top guilty about everything. Like,
I hated breaking rules and the perception that I was a rule breaker, and I didn't want to lose the status in my parents' eyes as the good little boy. I remember like looking at a Playboy in third grade at a friend's house and coming home and confessing to my mom about it, because I felt like I was guilty of something. And
what did she do?
She went, "That's okay. But you shouldn't, you know, if you feel bad about it, don't do it again," or something like that. Meant for the next like five times that I did it, I would go back and reconfess to her.
That's so funny.
She
was probably like, "Just do it. You don't have to tell
you're
me.
You're going
to
do it." Many more times.
Please don't tell me every time.
Mommy, am I still going to heaven? We'll see.
Let's get into that.
Who knows?
The thing I remember bursting into tears, though, with my parents over was, or with my mom, was there was a blossom that was about Blossom got her period, and I didn't know what that was. And my sister Amy explained it to me, and I thought, I think, by knowing that I had somehow lost my innocence. So when my mom came home and walked through the door, I burst into tears and ran up and like hugged her. And when I tell that story to people, they go, "Oh, because you were like, oh, I know what my mom was going through." And I was like, "No,
I'm not your little boy anymore."
Somehow by knowing this, I've opened
this
up a
like
big
you
door.
Going after,
crossed
going
the
off
threshold
to war.
Yeah, my rite of passage. But you were saying, did you have a? Do you remember when you I thought you were. I felt like I interrupted
oh,
you.
Oh no, no. Oh, okay. I mean, you, hey, you're the star, baby.
Yeah.
I'm just here to drop in a little dumb something when it gets a little too quiet.
No, no, you're the Sherpa. You're the you guys are the emotional Sherpas that are taking us up this hill.
It does sort of look like a snow-capped mountain.
Yeah,
here, right?
I like it. Yeah.
it's white. Yeah.
Plus, I brought my goat and donkey. Enough water for a week. No, I don't even remember what the question was that I would have been answering.
Oh.
But
did you ever do anything so bad as a kid? Oh, did you burst into tears with guilt?
Oh, no, I'm not actually capable of experiencing guilt. Next question. No, probably. Yeah, I mean, I did like so many things though. Like I was just like a young idiot, and so I would just do things and then not realize that like literally they were I came this close. Putting my fingers real close to each other, audience at home.
Very close.
Very close. Yeah. Sorry, I'll put it up to the mic.
That forefinger and thumb is very close.
Oh, yeah.
It's this big. Yeah, I almost lit my house on fire once, just because I was like, all right, let's light something on fire just to see fire, because fire seems like it'd be cool.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, that fire thing is like right next to the house, and it's like growing. The flames are growing.
Yeah.
And then... Yeah, like my brother and I ran inside. We got all the water that we could. We dumped it on top of the tree was just, you know, burnt to a crisp.
You burnt a whole tree?
Burnt a whole tree down.
Oh, my God. Did you feel very guilty, or were you like all in a day's work for a curious kid with a healthy amount of
pyromania?
Spunk?
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, right? Like when you're a kid and you're not the one in charge, there are these conflicting feelings. One, I feel bad that I did this thing, and maybe there should be some comeuppance. Maybe you think that, maybe you don't, but you definitely think, run, you know? Just like, I have to get as far away from the beating that I'm going to receive as possible.
Yeah.
I remember I crashed my dad's car once, and I lit this tree on fire, and then like I was just like, okay, when they get home and they see what I did to this tree, somebody's going to have to pay for this.
Yeah.
Run. And so I was just like, get as far away from the scene of the crime as possible, which is probably, like, it's probably not healthy.
No,
like,
that sounds like a healthy, like, I always have felt like I have a borderline, like, unhealthy respect for authority. And as a full adult, I'm trying to shake it and be more discerning. But, like, I feel like that's, like, I don't know, that feels more healthy to, like.
No, just the feeling that, like, that. One, I've always known that I could talk my way out of things through lies, you know, and so like, just like, you know, just like not even in like, I don't know, I could say something here that would convince them that I wasn't at fault, and then I would just be off the hook. And so I would be off the hook, you know, like, but I was definitely guilty and I should have been punished for it, because the truth is that you feel better after your punishment, like, because up until you get punished, you have this secret. It's not even the secret itself. It's the fact that you decided this was important enough that I'm going to keep it from people who do nothing but like support and feed and clothe me.
It's like a Watergate, a child's Watergate. Exactly. Like, it wasn't the crime; it was the hiding of the crime.
It was Wawa-gate.
So, Paul, so you said that you kind of grew up with this like very Catholic upbringing and. Sort of fear related to that. Mm-hmm. So then when did that begin to shift?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because, like, I think when you are surrounded by a lot of, like, rules and structure and stuff, at the same time, if you are restless or like to make jokes, it's a little like I remember hearing a I was watching this interview with the cast of SCTV, and then somebody was like, why are Canadians into comedy so much? And then everybody's response was like, oh, because Canada is the world's best straight man, because they're all rules and authority and pleasant. And I think when I was growing up, there was so much of that. I went to a Catholic school in a small town. It was Catholic. It was a... There were so many straight men that I could kind of, like, push up against. And there was something fun about pushing the envelope a little bit. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not the first person to say this, but like if somebody laughs, you can't really get in trouble for it because right. it was sort of like, well, I made you laugh. Yeah. So, you know, it was like you yeah. liked it. Mm.
Yeah.
So I can't get in trouble for bending the rules. You know?
Yeah.
So
right.
I think if I hadn't been surrounded by as many rules as I was and lived in fear of it, mm-hmm. it wouldn't have been as delicious to like right. to like bend those rules. Yeah. And so it somehow created a thirst or a hunger in me to yeah. start defying rules, and then it gets into a weird territory yeah. of, you know what I mean, of just like of how far you bend rules mm-hmm. and whatever and yeah. But
so did comedy sort of like supplant Catholicism in a way?
Yeah, no, I'm sure. Yeah, 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 yeah. And like particularly, yeah, my mom was my teacher in high school.
Really?
Yeah. And so like to mm. bend the rules there and get away with it, it felt great. And so there was something there that like yeah, I mm. guess like that's when I started like becoming less anxious about rules. But mm. I still, you know, have it to this day. I remember my wife Leslie, when she and I first started dating, one of the first big arguments we had was about, we went to a flea market and she was bargaining with the, mm-hmm. the people oh, right. at the flea market. And that's what you're supposed to do at a flea market.
Yeah.
You're supposed to haggle
yeah.
And negotiate. And it makes me so uncomfortable to be like, this person's asking for something, but you're going to disagree with them and try to convince them about the thing that they are right. asking
yeah.
you for.
Yeah, yeah.
And I realized later, it was like, oh, that's me. I'm bringing my own weird pathology to this. She's just doing the thing. These two are in agreement that this is the right. way it's supposed
this is
to
the
go.
Way to behave.
Yeah,
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 yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm bringing my. So that's not to say that now I'm an enlightened adult. The thing lately I've been thinking about a lot, as I talk about, you know, over the last few months, is like when people do a throwback Thursday mm-hmm. and they go like, it's like from 5 or 6 years ago, and they're like, back when I thought I was so cool and trying to convince people, as if you're not today, yeah. presently, yeah. constantly trying to like,
as if this is not
evolved.
In itself an act of trying
yeah.
to convince
right,
people
right,
how
right.
cool you are.
Yeah, that in like, itself is yeah. that, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which kind of makes it a little bit sweet. Like, I
right.
sort of like hate social media. Like,
yes.
But then
yeah,
it, like,
yeah.
when you think about it, it's like just a bunch of people like trying to mm-hmm. seem cool.
Yeah.
Like, it's like kind of sweet. Like, you can't.
That's the.
You
that's
can't
the,
fault people for wanting to
right.
seem cool.
And that's the release mm-hmm. valve with anything. Yeah. When you're like standing in line and somebody's being a jerk in line, you go, I could get annoyed by it, but I just try to flip a switch where I'm just like, hey, this is awesome that this person has feelings
yeah.
like I do
yeah.
sometimes.
Right, right, yeah, yeah.
I can still hate that person.
Sure, sure.
But,
yeah.
I think the word, I might be wrong, I feel like the word for that is, there's this word Sonder.
Huh.
Like
Joe
S-O-N.
Sonder?
Yeah, it's Joe Saunders.
Joe Saunders,
the
defined,
most empathetic
defined
man
be,
in the world.
Yeah. As being annoying in a movie theater line.
I think to Sonder is to be able to like imagine, I guess it's like sort of empathy, but I guess it's, or maybe I'm, you know what, I might be making this up. You know what, this is a different word.
No, but
no,
what,
it's, it's a, this is a word that means something completely different, I think.
I like it though.
Do you wanna, wait, oh, so it's S-O-N-D-E-R. Can you look it up, Zig? I think it may be like the memory. Oh, no, no, no. It's the realization that each random passerby is living a life as vivid and complex as your own.
Wow.
So it's sort, it's sort of the opposite of solipsism, like the feeling that nothing exists without you experiencing it. You watch, uh-huh. you see somebody else experiencing things, and it's like, oh, no, that's their reality, and that makes just as much sense as my reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey,
cool.
All right.
Nice. I don't believe it. I don't believe it at all. I don't know what these people are going through or why they're being so annoying around me.
So then speaking about like other people's problems, uh-huh. how are you around sick people? Are you like, do you have, how are you around sick people?
Oh, I like, This is sort of a version of this. When I see somebody trip in public,
yeah,
I will look away because I think they don't want me to be witness to their embarrassing moment.
Yeah.
But I will, when I look at it and examine it, I go, oh, but maybe that person's in need and I'm neglecting it. And that is a microcosm, I think, for all kinds of, like if I see somebody in a moment, it's probably not the healthiest thing, but like my attitude sometimes is like, that person would feel uncomfortable if I remark upon it or observe it. And so I'm not necessarily like put off by somebody's illness or if somebody else got sick, or I'm not worried about them infecting me. Mm-hmm. I've never had that sort of thing where I'm like, oh, that person's sick, I got to get away from them. But it is like it will be like a turning away out of respect for what that person's going through. And in retrospect, it's probably maybe a form of desertion.
Can you think of any example? Like, are there any more like examples of like do you feel like you've done that in more sort of like with people who are closer to you or bigger or like more other situations?
Well, like, I guess like you know when I think about like I don't know if this is exactly the answer, but like I sometimes won't ask somebody to get me a glass of water when they're in the kitchen because I'll think I don't want to be on the hook and make that person feel – or I don't want to feel like indebted.
Oh, right.
And so like if somebody was sick, I would tend to them like a person I'm dating or something. Mm-hmm. If they got sick, I'd be happy to be the person who's there like – getting soup.
Right. Yeah.
But in the back of my mind, I'm always thinking like, but if the shoe was on the other foot, I would feel weird about this because then I would feel indebted somehow.
So it's like sort of you would rather, when you are
it's
sick.
It's codependence, I think, is maybe the word for that, which is, like sort of like
when you are sick, do you feel like you don't want people to take care of you because you don't want to feel indebted to them?
Yeah, I feel uncomfortable with attention while I'm sick.
Interesting.
But that's not to say I don't like help, and that's not also to say on some level that I might court sickness as a way. Like, I remember in college, I went through a breakup, and I was talking to my friend, and I was like, you know, I have this fantasy of, like, I'm just not – for, like, 2 weeks, I'm not going to, like, eat and I'm not going to shower. And so if my ex or somebody who knows her sees me, they'll go, wow, Paul's, like, in really bad shape. And then they go, oh, my gosh, I got to run back to him because he's, you know, something's wrong. But when I told my friend that, he's like – so you think the way you're going to get this person back is by looking disgusting and gross? And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Looking so disgusting, people are worried about you.
Yeah. So there's something to that. But, yeah, like to be around somebody – I know like people say like, oh, you don't want to be around somebody who's sick or ill because it's a reflection of that could happen. You don't want to see somebody who's cancer-ridden because you're like, I could get cancer. Right. And I'm sure that – exists on some level when I encounter stuff like that, but it's not the top thing on my mind.
Yeah,
I'm not thinking like, if anything, it is that thing of like, I don't know if this person wants me to see them in this moment of vulnerability.
I think a big part of the reason that we laugh when we see somebody fall is because we're existing in those in the middle of that spectrum of not wanting to cause them shame by being the spectator of their moment, but also not knowing how to help exactly. Like we've talked about it on this podcast before. Yeah. Madeline and I once saw we saw an old lady fall on some steps, and we like jumped out of the car and like ran and helped her. And at the end of the day, there's like a couple of things that you can do to make a person's life like a little bit better for like a second. Yeah. And then we like literally just had to put her on a bus and send her to wherever it is that she lives. Like, we're not taking you home to take
somewhere else.
That's
great.
Yeah.
Next stop, hospital. She put a quarter in and she went off.
It'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
Many stops later. But yeah.
I do find like sort of sometimes I feel like if you like help someone a little bit, then it like opens the door to like, well, you could help them so much. Like, you know, like this is like, I'm not trying to make myself sound like any kind of like very good person either. Like, but like there was this one time when like my husband, Ben, and I were walking down Hollywood Boulevard and there was this like teenage girl, like, so wasted that she was like passed out in her own vomit and like a table in a pizza place. And like, it was like, there were like all these like people kind of like trying to figure out what to do. And so I was like trying to help and then like trying to like figure out like how to call her roommate. And then at that point I felt like I was so, I like just by opening the door a crack, I became like so invested that we like took her back to her. We like figured out where she lived and took her back to where she lived. And then I was like on the phone later that night with her roommate being like, don't just put her in bed. You got, and like, and like trying to like, I'm sure kind of crossed some line, but I like couldn't figure out. Like, I was like, well, I'm already involved in this, so any shortcoming on my part, like, if something horrible happens to this girl, like, it's on me.
Yeah, when the court transcripts come out, they'll be like, wait, this person came along and got involved and then just dropped out and the person died? The blood is on Madeline's
hands. We spent, like,
hours
with this girl. But then she called me, a couple days later, because I guess my number was in her phone. Oh, because I like, she had my number because I had been in communication with her roommate. And
she was like, I saw you're a performer at UCB. Can you get me into some classes? Can I get out of house team somehow? No, but she.
And she like called me and like thanked me and stuff. And I never called her. I like never wanted to. I didn't call her back because I thought it would be. I was like, kind of the same thing as you're falling. Seeing someone fall, it was like too embarrassing for me to like think about having to like interact with her sober after like thought like I was sort of if I were in that situation, I thought I would have been so embarrassed, and so I was like assuming she would be embarrassed. I just like didn't want to deal, so I like never called her back.
But she just wants to thank you. The thing I hate when I see somebody fall is the like the forced self-effacing laugh.
Yeah.
Like when somebody slips and goes, everybody's okay. Yeah. I was just like, I hate that. So like, it's the same sort of thing with somebody calling and being like, hey, we don't have to get into how you, my wife got food poisoning like a few months ago, and I'm my worst fear is being wrongfully accused in the disappearance or murder of my wife or loved one.
You have a staircase fear.
Yeah. And she jokes. She's like, I'm going to staircase you someday. You'll be blamed. But,
good one, honey.
She got food poisoning once, and we went to the emergency room, and she was throwing up. Oh. And I put a little bit of her puke in like a napkin and set it to the side.
In a napkin?
Yeah, and left it at our house when we went to the emergency room, just so I was like, just in case the boys at the crime lab need to look at it, they'll know. She got food poisoning. He didn't poison her.
You were so, because also in that scenario, she dies.
Yes.
Jumped so many steps ahead that you thought maybe my wife will die, and your first response was to save her puke so you're not on.
I don't want to be like, the gallows.
Oh, I got to say some nice things to her. Oh, let me make sure, like, anybody who would want to be here for her last moments could be here.
No, how am I going to get myself off the hook here?
I got to get some DNA in a napkin.
No, I was also very attentive.
Oh, of course. But you protect yourself. That's what they say on the airplane. You got to take care of you, and then you take care of the person next to you.
Yeah. We have a line. I don't know if it's going to be in in Love, but we did shoot an argument scene in season 2 where somebody's like accuses my character of being codependent, and they're like, oh, when you when a plane's crashing, you're supposed to put the oxygen mask on yourself before helping others. Yeah. And this is genuinely my attitude when I hear people say that. I'm like, the plane's crashing anyway. Who cares? Yeah, which, yeah, I guess yeah. is just I just focus group that joke right now to you guys.
Good but, job.
Guys, you're going to love it when season two comes out.
Everybody just heard that. I was like, oh.
But could the plane, what if the plane doesn't crash? Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah,
that
we're
might
just
be funnier.
Both passed out.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, speaking of gross things, you want to play a gross game with us?
Sure.
Yeah, I hate this game.
Yeah, this is a game.
This is the fucking worst.
Regular listeners, you'll be familiar with this one. It's called Figure One Chicken. It's a game in which. We go on the application Figure One, which is basically Instagram for doctors. It's what they do is they compile pictures of some of the most horrific things that you can imagine, and they show them to other doctors. I think primarily to get second opinions, but maybe just to play stupid podcast games like we are. I don't know. I don't know what doctors do with their.
I think
their...
also deep down they're all a bunch of weirdos.
Yeah, yeah.
They're
like,
they like looking at gross
freaks.
Stuff.
Oh,
yeah,
that's so sick. Oh my god, so sick.
Oh, dude,
bro. So yeah, bros. We're gonna. We're going to look at some horrifying
doctors
pictures.
Doctors are kind of bros, though, right?
Oh, for sure.
Most of them. Yeah.
Surgeons, I've always heard, are basically just jocks with knives.
Yeah.
I also, there's a trope that I don't know if anybody's ever pointed out that a lot of times when a director does a cameo in their movies, mm-hmm. there are a lot of times doctors because I think both of it comes from the same like God yeah. complex.
That makes sense.
Of like, I can control the universe. But yeah,
Quentin Tarantino's always like an Australian cowboy or something.
But that's Harold true. Ramis in Groundhog Day and Jon Favreau in Elf.
Oh.
In Drillbit Taylor, the director, makes a character. That's the truth. So, those are the three examples I have.
Those are good examples.
Oh, okay. And Sidney Pollack in Death Becomes Her. He plays a doctor. So this is a little theory I'm working on, guys.
Yeah.
They
great
both
movie.
Start... And end with DNR, too, so...
Oh.
Folks, if you haven't
that
seen...
That means nothing.
Death Becomes Her is a great movie. Let's throw that out there for people that haven't seen it.
They They're both all, start with DNR.
If this is a podcast that's sort of, about, like, bodies and health and stuff, Death Becomes Her is a trip, man.
It's a trip.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, if you had the fantasy that your body could stay... That you could live forever, but then it's sort of like, but you have to take care of your body because if you break off a finger, it's off forever, and you're living forever without a finger and stuff.
Oh, so, weird.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
And then you fight your best friend.
Goldie Hawn.
Great movie. Our childhood had a lot of great, like a lot of very, very creative kind of weird movies. Like less reliant on like the visuals or maybe like the technology that
Well, the 80s, there was all that like body horror stuff, like David Cronenberg and like John Carpenter's stuff. It's all about like your body's doing gross things. And I was listening to an interview with John Carpenter, and he was saying he thought it came out of like this 80s sort of like was the beginning of like about this idea of like perfecting your body and sculpting it. So it was like a reaction to that. Like people would go to movies to be like, oh, what if – yeah, I'm going to the working out every day and going jogging and eating specific foods to keep healthy. But what if you started turning into a fly? Wouldn't that be gross? You know. But so let's do it right now.
Yeah.
Let's look at it.
I just looked at the first picture by accident. Oh, Jesus.
It's a picture of Jesus? He's
looking good. He's trim.
Jesus was always trim.
Mm-hmm.
He
never let him smoke up.
No. I wish Jesus was depicted as just a fat dude.
I'd love that.
That'd
be great.
So nice.
That's what you would, if Jesus had lived long, because you just have fat Elvis version of Jesus if he lives long enough.
Yeah.
But if, I feel
since
like
he died at 33.
The Bible was like the first version of like, body shaming media, though, right? Like, you never saw one fat person in the Bible. Right?
Yeah, that was the cover.
Everybody was white. Everybody was thin.
That was my cover of Cosmo, was the crucifix at the front of the church.
What about Big Tony? Big Tony was a fat. Oh, no, sorry. I think he was from The Sopranos. I confuse. I frequently confuse him. Oh, my God. This is horrifying.
Okay.
Okay, so,
this is how we're going to play today.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Like all of our games, the rules are constantly changing. In this case, what we're going to do is, I have found this picture already. It's horrifying. And we're going to see which of these two can look at it for the longest.
Oh,
and then they'll get a point. And then, Paul, you can pick a new picture and we'll have to look at it.
I don't want to pick.
You got to pick.
No.
Madeline, okay. This is your game.
Oh, that's the worst. Okay. Can whoever loses have to pick?
Okay, yeah, yeah. Whoever loses has to pick.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Okay.
Picking is hard. Yeah. You have to see.
Okay. Do you want me to tell you what this is before you look at it?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. F/U. Do we know what that means?
No.
I think it must have something to do with like a close up kind of thing, but I don't know what the F stands for. 8 days expressed large amount of purulent material from pocket in wound from this is a cellulitis injury.
Oh, gosh.
I haven't even seen it yet.
I really don't want to.
It's bad.
I really don't want to.
On the count of three.
Okay.
One.
Oh, God.
Two. Three.
Oh, my God.
Look at him go.
I'm watching. I want to win because I don't want to.
Yeah, me too.
One.
I don't want to look at.
They're going on 10 seconds.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man. It's purely a sound effects game, but I think it's enjoyable.
Was that someone's knee?
I believe right below their knee.
Oh.
So get your cellulitis taken care of at least within 7 days. Because that 8 days.
Come on, guys. If anything, just take
care of your cellulitis, guys.
Paul, you're up.
All right. This is really the worst.
Oh my God. Gosh. I hate this all.
This is the worst game. I'm sorry, Paul.
It's horrible.
Paul did agree to play this game in advance, but we probably should have told him more before we made him agree to it.
Oh, it's so horrible. It makes me realize how much I would never be a doctor.
No, I would be a lawyer because I want to sue you for even finding this, this application.
All right. This is a 70-year-old Pacific Islander man with fungating breast cancer for palliative care.
I don't even know what those words mean mostly, but I'm terrified.
Okay.
And I don't know if Kaz is the word for it, or is the name of the person who posted the thing? That'd be its own game, sort of like username or disease. All right. Okay.
Our own D&D. Okay. Disease
One,
or doctor.
Oh, God.
Okay.
One.
Two.
Three.
It looks like he's got like a shrimp coming out of his nipple.
Oh my God. No.
Okay, let's get a little closer.
No.
Okay, you can just get closer.
Oh, you can zoom in on real Instagram now, but still not figure out.
Oh, you can? I didn't know that about real Instagram.
Oh, my
God. Good to know.
It looks like a donut.
I think it looks like a shrimp.
It's horrible.
I can't.
I don't want to see it.
Okay, Madeline's. I win that round.
So this is the last round, right? This is I can't. You know, it is like when you go.
I hate it. Oh, it's too close.
When you go into a haunted house, and you're like, "Yeah, I'll go into a haunted house. I know it's going to be scary, but I'll go into it." And then you go in, and halfway into it, you're like, "Why did I do this?"
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah.
That's how I feel right now with this game. I agreed to it.
Should we just kill the game?
Let's do one more.
It's a good game.
We got a Rasputin fact if we wanted. Do you know much about Rasputin?
The guy?
Yeah, about his death.
I know it was prolonged, right?
Yeah,
it took forever.
Man, it's impressive. We'll talk about it after this. With a minute remaining.
Oh, what is it? I hate it.
You have to read it.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
That one's not going to be able to pick
one. Oh, no. This one's too sad. Ah! Okay. This one. Ah! Okay.
I'm sorry, okay. Paul.
All right. Here we go.
Okay. Ah! A 58-year-old female with a 4-day onset of abscess. She visited an urgent care and had a debridement done. She arrives in this condition. Hand.
Always the debridement, never the debridement.
Hand wanted me to IND the abscess, and of course the bare DIP joint was visible under the abscess. Started patient on broad-spectrum antibiotics with a referral to hand surgeon the next day. So this is like a fucked-up finger you're about to see.
Fucked-up finger.
I don't want to. I can't even.
Oh, no.
Jesus.
Oh.
Right.
Okay. I thought that was the nail at first.
Paul
it's
tapped
not
out already.
I immediately
looked out. This is, okay, I can't even look at it. Zig, can you make
this
it
This is my
away?
New face. This is how I look now.
Zig, can you turn that
way.
Can you make it go away, Zig?
Forever.
Forever.
That's what the person said to the doctor. Can you please make it go away?
Can you please make it go away?
Can you hit click back? From this thing.
It's horrible. I feel like in the aftermath of this game, we should give a quick credit to our friend of the podcast, Casey Trela, who is the one who suggested this game to us.
Oh,
that's good. That's
Casey,
good.
Thank you. You ruined everybody's life.
Also, while we're shouting out regarding this game, this is not a joke. I don't know why you guys were laughing at this. Shout out to our old producer and friend, Alexis, who originally played this game with us.
Yes,
and
did
a great job producing for us, and she's not with us any longer. But Alexis, we love you. Thanks for playing with us in the past. Yep. Zig, we love you too. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah. Hey, from Alexis to Zig, A to Z.
Yeah, right. Whoa. Paul.
There you go.
Paul, you're never leaving.
I was a writer on A to Z, so that's why.
Excellent. So we just got a second or two here, and I feel like at least, you know, we could always erase it if we want to, but let's tell the story of Grigori Rasputin.
Yeah, let's leave you guys with the story of Rasputin.
Yeah.
It's a little inspiring in a way.
Yeah, it's,
if
it's,
we could
it's
be
fucking nuts.
Have his resilience.
No better word could be chosen than resilience.
Yeah.
I mean, this is – so I'm not going to be able to give you any backstory here, guys, but this is about – the murder of Rasputin, and it's, like most murder stories, very inspiring. So I'm just going to read this aloud.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Grigori Rasputin. He was poisoned, but he didn't die. Mm. So he went after the guys who poisoned him.
Oh, cool.
And they stabbed him. He still didn't die and kept going after the assassins.
Wow.
So they shot him and thought that that had finished the job.
Yeah, you would think.
Is this a sketch just heightening?
Yeah.
Poison, knife, gun, fire.
Sketch students, very inspiring.
Yeah.
So they thought they had finished him off with the gun. His eyes opened, and he lunged for one of the assassins to strangle him.
This guy knows how to hold a grudge.
He's got a little bit of an attitude.
Yeah. Grow up.
Yeah, come on.
So he lunged for one of the assassins and started strangling him. So they shot him some more.
Wow.
So they're shooting him. And he's like, basically he's like, guys, come on, cut it out. So he crawls away from the shooting. Like we all would if someone was shooting us. Like, I'm not playing with you guys anymore. Like, we all had that experience when you were a kid. Your friends are shooting you a bunch. And you're like, I'm just going home.
I'm going home.
Crawling home.
Mom's making stovetop. So he crawls away. So then they thrashed him, tied him up, threw him in a sack, and threw the sack into the river.
Whoa.
2 days later, the sack was recovered, and it looked like Rasputin almost escaped his bindings and clawed out of the bag. To top it off, while his body was being burned, the tendons shrunk, and he sat up in the fire. Rasputin, ladies and gentlemen. Rasputin.
Sitting up in the fire.
Sitting right up in the fire.
But shockingly, Rasputin was unwilling to play the game Figure One Chicken out of fear.
We win.
If I had been Rasputin and I had gotten poisoned, that first moment I'd have been like, okay, that's fine. Bye.
Bye.
See you later. You mentioned that stovetop. Mom's making stovetop. this is related entirely to the theme of this podcast, me deconstructing the stovetop commercial like Jerry Seinfeld. But the thing that I always thought was weird about that commercial was, you know, it's about two boys. They're on the phone and they're trying to coordinate their dinner times because they're both going to have stovetop.
Oh, I don't think I've seen this before.
So they,
oh, really?
So the kids are on the phone and they're like, what time are you having dinner? What time are you having dinner? Yeah. And they're like, can I go eat at Tommy's house? Can I go over eat at Billy's house? And they're trying to figure out a way to get stovetop twice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was fixed on this premise that like the one kid was like, Mom, what time are we eating? And it was like 6. And then the other kid's like, Mom, when are we eating? And it was like 8. And I'm like, what negligent shitty family is like, we eat at 8.
Yeah.
You gotta wait 5 hours after you're out of school to have one morsel of food. What family eats at 8? Yeah.
That is like a real like.
That's a late time. That's like when you're
Los
supposed
Angeles.
To be in bed.
Yeah. Some hippie lib parents.
Yeah.
We didn't hate at our house.
Well, I think what they didn't want you to know is that Billy's parents are actually his agent and manager. They met at Alcove around 8. It was like a 12-minute dinner.
We'll eat at 10%.
Wow.
That's great.
Yeah.
Let's. Well, Paul, let's send you on your way out into the world.
All right.
You got so much to do. You've been such a great.
Can I tell a quick constipation story?
Oh, that's right. We got to get to your constipation story. Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, it'll be real quick.
No, take
all your time. Mostly, I was like conscious of your schedule.
Yeah.
But no, absolutely tell your story.
Please.
And then let's cut out the part where we forgot to do it. Is there any? Should we preface it at all?
It's been built up too much.
Oh, we're just gonna keep all. We're gonna keep all of this.
Let's keep it all. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we should.
Okay, let's give it.
So yeah, you know, thematically, this story is having its own constipation, which is really forcing this story out, squeeze it as hard as I can.
Well, poop it out, buddy. Poop it out.
Well, I was in third grade. I was having stomach pains, and I didn't understand it. And I love that I'm going out on this. I told my mom, and you know, she was driving me to go see the doctor about it, and she went, "Now you're sure you're actually feeling this?" Because mm-hmm. I don't, you know, and I get it from a parent's perspective. If you're like, "I'm gonna have to go to the hospital for like an hour and a half right now," I'm gonna ask my kid, "Is this a real thing?"
You know,
she was just doing her job.
Yeah.
But it did set in me a lifetime of, if I ever experience any sort of pain, I'm like, am I really feeling this?
Oh, yeah.
Is this a legitimate thing? Or,
yeah.
So it's like a weird, negotiation you go in your head. But we went there, and I went and saw the doctor. And as a 9-year-old boy, I had a grown man stick his finger up my butt. To check. Uh-huh. And
I thought you said, as a young boy, I had a grown man's dick.
Dick?
He said, as a young boy, I had a grown man's dick.
What an unorthodox doctor.
Sorry,
but I was like, no, you thought he was saying,
I thought he was
as
saying,
a young
like,
boy.
As I was a young boy, I had the dick of an adult.
He thought that was a brag.
So I was just
a kid, but don't tell that to my dick.
That'd be funny if it was like some like Benjamin Button thing where I was born with a grown man's dick, and then as
and
I age,
have
I have a baby penis, a hairless baby penis.
Someone's got to have that. You guys tweeted us using the hashtag Benjamin Button penis. If this has happened to you or anyone you know,
if you're one of our aged listeners who's had your penis grow backwards,
hashtag Button Dick.
I mean, I guess I experienced that on some level as just a with a. boners.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
For a moment, I'm like, hey. And then I'm like, oh, I'm a baby again. Anyway. So, but yeah, I went to the doctor, and he was like, you know, my mom put he put the finger in, and then he was immediately like, oh, yes, this boy is constipated.
Wait, so he put his finger in your butt and just touched a bunch of poop?
Yep.
He, like, wasn't even checking your prostate or anything.
No.
He was truly just,
he was just checking to checking see to how see. Close it was to my butthole and how hard it was. And so it was just like, okay, I just touched a brick wall here. And so he gave me a greased bullet, like an enema, a white enema. And he was like, so go home and put this up your butt, and then it'll dissolve, and you know what enemas do. But since I was 9, I was too old to have my parents do it, right?
Oh, yeah.
But I was too young to know what the fuck I was doing.
Yeah.
So I remember, like, this is one of the most traumatic memories. It was like me hunched over in the bathroom trying to put a greased white enema up my butt and struggling for like 20 minutes trying to do it. And then after much work, I was like, I finally got it. I was like, hey, all right, Paul, you're all right. And then I walked out of the bathroom and it rolled out of my pant leg. Guys, that's my story.
Wait, I have questions though. Because what do you...
Madeline, he said, guys, that's my story.
That was the last line in a novel. You'd be like, I spent 100 pages, 250 pages, and then the enema rolled out of the pant leg. You'd be like, yeah.
And that's the end of my story. That's
actually, you have questions. Yes.
That's actually how the Rasputin story ends. Guys, that's my story.
It sat up in the fire. Yeah.
Did you get it in eventually?
Yeah.
Did you do it yourself again, or did you finally ask for your parents'
no,
help?
No, I did it. I did it myself.
So you got it in the second time.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't realize that's what an enema was. Like, I didn't know. I
suppository.
Heard of it. Yeah.
Maybe that was the word.
An enema, I think, is an enema where you shoot.
I think there's
water
a few
your...
different types.
Oh, guys, I was misusing the word enema this whole time.
I didn't know what any
for
of this
your
stuff
whole
was.
Life.
That's
yeah.
the most component, the most embarrassing component of this podcast today. Is that I was using the wrong word. No, I guess a suppository.
Okay, yeah. Suppository. Yeah.
So an enema is it shoots water up in there?
Or other things.
Cleans it out.
Because there's like coffee enemas.
Oh.
That's like a thing.
Gross.
Barium
enemas.
So
you can ingest it through your
mouth. Oh, I thought coffee enema was like a joke when people... Or like, I drank so much coffee.
It was an
enema. It was an enema.
I don't know. Maybe it is.
Coffee. I mean, I don't know.
Don't talk to me until I had my enema. Yeah, that's a Spencer's Gift shirt waiting to happen.
I'll have a venti enema. Half cap, soy, no whip enema, please.
You know what I hate? How they never write my name right on an enema. Have you ever noticed that?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that lady?
Oh, it's an easy name.
There's something about the term venema that really, like, that really is upsetting me.
A venti enema,
yeah, like a venti,
oh,
like the largest
venema.
Like, yeah.
V for venema.
Well, let's start a new podcast.
Yeah.
This is going great.
A to Z to V for venema.
This has been a really great time.
Yeah, yeah, guys,
really,
I had a great time.
That was worth it to save that constipation story for the end.
Good. I'm glad it was worth it.
It was the perfect cherry on top.
So to speak. Yeah. Thank you for having me, guys.
I think you're delightful.
No, we think you're delightful.
Thank you so much, Paul. Thanks so much to our guest, Paul Rust, for coming out. You can find him on Twitter at Paul Rust, I think on Instagram as well. And, of course, make sure to check out Love. It's a Netflix original series. Season 1 is available, season 2 to come. Thank you so much, Paul.
This has been Definitely Dying. Thank you guys so much for listening.
You can follow us on Twitter at Definitely Dying. And until next time, stay healthy.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.
Bye.